The Parsha B'chukosai is really dominated by what's known as the brachos and the klalos, the Torah's predictions of good that will befall the Bnei Yisrael if they do as they're meant to, and the opposite, which is the tochacha, if we should not behave as we should. And to begin with the good news, B'chukosai Telechu, with Mitzvosai Tishmur, the Torah says if you follow the Torah, if you keep the mitzvahs, of course, there's much discussion exactly what each phrase in this opening pasuk means, Ameilim B'Torah, as we've discussed on many occasions. But in general, it's talking about the Jewish people keeping the mitzvahs. What will happen? Says the second pasuk of the Parsha, V'nosati Gishmechem B'itam, rain will fall in its time. V'nastar etzivu la, the land will give its produce. V'etz asada yuten piryo. And the pasuk goes on to describe over the next dozen or so psukim, less, all of the benefits, which are seem like a reward of sorts. This is what will happen if you keep the mitzvahs. And a question which is prominent amongst the writings of many Meforshim, Rishonim, is there seems to be something that hasn't been said. When we ask the question, what do we hope for when we keep mitzvahs in terms of reward, our thoughts are turned further ahead than the next rainfall or the next season. We think in terms of Olam Haba, and the question is, why is it that the Torah doesn't really talk about Olam Haba? It only really talks about Olam Hazeh. And there are many, many approaches and responses to this question. The Ramban, we should note, raises this question here in his Perush to Parshas B'chukosai. And Ramban says that actually the Torah, in discussing or detailing the physical benefits of keeping mitzvahs, is actually telling us more than Olam Haba. As if to say, Olam Haba is a spiritual reward. Mitzvahs are spiritual deeds. The notion that a spiritual deed should have a positive spiritual result is relatively straightforward. I mean, the notion that a spiritual deed should have a physical result is actually a major chiddush, because there needs to be an interface between those two. The idea that spiritual input should lead to physical output actually has crossed over from one realm to the other. If spiritual acts can affect the physical realm, which is not their natural domain, so certainly they will have positive spiritual results. And therefore, as far as Ramban is concerned, the Torah told us more about the power of mitzvahs and what they're capable of affecting by discussing Olam Hazeh than it did Olam Haba. That answer, I think, I would say, is quite sophisticated, in the sense that the Torah has left something unsaid, but it's contained or subsumed. It's the lesser chiddush, so to speak. We can infer it from what the Torah does say. But a very common approach amongst the Mefarshim is to say that the Torah doesn't discuss Olam Haba because it's impossible to put it into words. It's something that's so beyond any of our experience that one couldn't talk about it. Now, to say impossible when we're dealing with the Torah is quite a thing to say, because in principle, nothing's impossible for the Torah. Clearly, it means that it would be impossible for us to understand anything that the Torah said, and therefore those words would be of little value to us. And therefore, the Torah speaks to us in terms of things that we can relate to. Now, while that's quite a popular, shall we say, approach, the Torah doesn't talk about it because it's beyond our comprehension, there's no point in describing it, it's very interesting to note that if you go through the Gemara, every now and then you will find exactly that, something of a description or a depiction or a portrayal of Olam Haba. The Gemara discusses it in Maseches Brachos and Daf Yud Zayin, Ha'olam Haba, what's it like? Ein bo achila velo shtia, there's no eating and no drinking. Tzadikim yoshvim, atroseim bo roshehem. Their crowns are in their heads, whatever that means, whatever it means, but the Gemara has spoken about it. The Gemara in Masechet Tanis says that in the La'asid Lavo, the tzaddikim will be in a circle, Hashem will be in the middle, and Ze Hashem Kivinu Lo. There are descriptions of sorts in the Gemara. The question is, if the reason why the Torah didn't talk about it is because there's no way to meaningfully describe it, then why does the Gemara talk about it? And which apparently indicates that there it is possible to describe it. That's an interesting shine. And this question is dealt with by the Maharal. In his Sefer Gevuras Hashem, Gevuras Hashem is a Sefer that deals with Inyanei Pesach and Yetzias Mitzrayim. The Ramban has three introductions to Gevuras Hashem. And introduction number one, he deals with this question. And his answer, I believe, is most profound. As Maharal, we need to appreciate that what we have in Kisvei Kodesh, that is to say, Torah, Nevi'im, and Ksuvim, are all works of Nevuah, of greater or lesser degrees, obviously, going down from Torah to Nevi'im and then to Ksuvim. But they come through the medium of Nevuah. Says Maharal, In a somewhat rarefied sense, or in a higher sense, we need to remember, however, that Nevuah uses the faculty of vision. The way that Nevuah is communicated to the Navi is through a vision. And we find that often the Navi is referred to, other watchwords for Navi will be seers. The Roeh, Anochi HaRoeh, or the Chozeh, Gad HaChozeh, Shmuel was the Roeh. They're called seers because although it's not physical sight, most people don't see Nevuah, but nonetheless it is using one of the higher levels of ultimately the faculty of sight, of vision, in order to receive a prophetic vision, a Mare Nevuah. And the reason why that's so important is because if you would ever have something which you could not really perceive, you couldn't see it on any level, then it will not come in through Nevuah. It's outside the scope of what Nevuah does. Nevuah sees and then describes. Something that couldn't be seen by the Navi can't be then communicated to the Navi through a Mare Nevuah. And therefore, and in fact, this idea is communicated a very interesting statement of Rabbi Yochanan in the Gemara, twice actually. The first time is in Maseches Brachos, in Daf Lama Dalet Amud Beis. And Rabbi Yochanan says, Kol HaNevim, all of the Nevuahs that you will hear, of the future, of good times, of things, good things that will happen in the future, Lo Nisnabu Ela Limos HaMashiach. All of those are really, in one way or another, describing Yimos HaMashiach. None of them are describing Olam Haba. Aval Ol, with regard to Olam Haba, quotes, ironically, a pasuk from the Navi, from Yeshaya, which says, Ayin lo ra'asa Elokim zulasecha. No eye has seen this. Until it happens, no eye can see it. From the vantage point, so to speak, of Olam Hazeh, no eye, even a prophetic eye, can't see, it can't make the prophetic equivalent of visual contact or perception with Olam Haba. And therefore, no Navi could talk about it. It couldn't come through Nevuah. Interestingly, and again, ironically, that's why it's possible for the Gemara to talk about it, for the Chachamim to talk about it, because Chachamim are not Nevi'im. They don't receive and discuss things through the medium of visions, but rather through ideas. They can talk about it. And it's possible for the Seichel to talk about something abstract and detached from all human experience in the way that Nevuah never can. Which is interesting. Nevuah, obviously, in so many ways, is higher level than Chochmah. But nonetheless, the Gemara says in Maseches Bava Basra and Daf Yud Beis, Chacham Odef Mi Navi. A Chacham can be greater than a Navi, in the sense that the reach of his mind can extend to topics that are beyond the reach of the vision of a Navi. And thus the Torah and the Nevi'im and the Ksuvim do not discuss Olam Haba, and the Gemara does. Nevuah can't see it, but Chochmah can try and get an understanding of it. The truth of the matter is, this distinction between Chochmah of Seichel and the vision of Nevuah as says Rav Huttner in the Pachad Yitzhak in Chanukah, will explain to us something else. The Gemara in Maseches Yuman, the beginning of the seventh perek, discusses the Anshei Knesset HaGadola. And the Gemara, who we know, they are the Sanhedrin of 120 who came back in the beginning of the second Commonwealth. And the Gemara in Samach Tes Amud Beis there of Yuma asked the question, why are they called Anshei Knesset HaGadola, the Great Assembly? Which actually is a very interesting question, because one would have thought it's relatively self-understood. They were the great Sanhedrin. But the Gemara is not happy with that. The Gemara wants a specific reason. What's so great about them? Why are they called Anshei Knesset HaGadola? And the Gemara answers, Lama Nikra Shaman Anshei Knesset HaGadola, this is Rabbi Shua ben Levi, Shehechziru Atara Liyoshna. You've ever heard that expression before. This is where it comes from. Hechziru Atara Liyoshna, they restore the crown to its former glory. What does that mean? Says the Gemara as follows. Originally, Asa Moshe. Moshe came, Omar, Hakel, Hagadol, Hagibor, Vahanara. These are words that we say in the first bracha of Shemona Esrei. Their origins are in Chumash Devarim, in Parshas Ekev. Those four words, Hakel, Hagadol, Hagibor, Vahanara. Okay, those are different ways, obviously, of describing aspects of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's interaction with the world. However, says the Gemara, Asa Yirmiyah. Yirmiyahu HaNavi came along hundreds of years later, v'amar, and he said, Nochrim Mekarkerim Behecholo. The heathens, the non-Jews, they're celebrating in his sanctuary, meaning they're destroying the Beis HaMikdash. Aye no ra'osav. So where is his awe? Where is the awe of Hashem? You don't see it? That's quite a thing to say. Most people would get into trouble if they said something like that. But Yirmiyah said it. Not only did he say it, but therefore, lo amar nora. So when he described Hashem, he missed out the word nora. He says, hakel hagodol bagibor. It's actually a pasuk in last week's Haftarah, which was from Yirmiyah Perek Lamed Beis. Hashem Tzavakos, hakel hagodol hagibor. If you're Pavlov would have you in that state during the Haftarah, you'd finish the sentence for him, v'hanora. But he didn't say Nora, because he didn't see it. Okay. So Hashem's, these descriptions are being curtailed. What's next? Also Daniel. Daniel came even further. He's now in the time of, well into the Nebuchadnezzar's conquest. Omar Nochrim Mishtabshim Babinyan. The Nochrim, they're subjugating his children. Aye Gvurosov, where's his might? So what did he say? Well, what did he not say more correctly? Aye Gibor, Lo Omar Gibor. He said Hakel HaGadol. I mean, it's just getting shorter and shorter. They don't see it, they're not talking about it. And this is how it stayed until Anshei Knesset HaGadola came and brought these things back. Asa inhu v'amru came along the Anshei Knesset HaGadola, and they said, Adarabba, what are you asking? Where is Hashem's might? Where is his awe? Zui gvuroso. This is his might, Shekovesh es Yitzro. The fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows history and all of these people, these Rishayim, to do what they seek to do, and he waits for the right time, that's Gevura, Shekovesh es Yitzro, so to speak. He's patient with Rishayim. Ve'elehe nura osav. And here is his awe. You know what is? Where do you see Hashem's awe when the Jewish people are being subjugated? How can they don't disappear? Ilmale mara'o shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, were it not for his awe, heyach uma achas yecholu l'skayim beina umas, how could this one nation survive amongst all those others that are dedicated to destroying it? There is his awe. And they brought back Hakel, Hagodol, Hagibor, Vanora, and they said it, and they said, you say it, and we do, because they instituted the text of the Shemona Esrei. So this section of the Gemara is unbelievable, because you have the Anshei Knesset HaGadola reclaiming these descriptions, and the Nevi'im were just removing them one by one. What's it all about? So Huttner says, essentially, the principle is as the Maharal enunciated it. The difference between Yirmiyah and Daniel, on the one hand, and Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, is that with Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, Nevuah is coming to a close, and we're moving from the state of where we have Nevi'im to Chachamim. The reason why Yirmiyah, if he can't see a demonstration, an active demonstration of Hashem's might or awe, so then he can't talk about it in Nevuah, because Nevuah doesn't see it. And if Daniel further sees what seems does not seem actively and visibly and overtly to be an expression of Hashem's might as well, so they can't talk about it in Nevuah. The Anshei Knesset HaGedolah represent a new era whereby we don't use the medium of Nevuah to determine what we know and what we can talk about. They've moved to Chochmah, and Chochmah can begin to infer. Chochmah can begin to use evidence. Chochmah can work forensically. Chochmah can look at the Jewish people subjugated and say, there's Mora here. You can look at Hashem's patience, say, there's Gevura here. It's not overt, it's not explicit, and if it's not explicit, Nevuah can't see it. But if it's implicit, Chochmah can detect it. And that's why they brought back these terms that the Nevi'im missed out. So that's a major discussion which relates to this principle of the Maharal, the difference between Nevuah and Chochmah. Now, we've mentioned that Rabbi Yochanan seems to be the basis for all of this in the Gemara, because Rabbi Yochanan says all of the Nevi'im, Yeshaya and Yechezkel and all of them, Treyasar, all the good things that they're talking about, that's Yemos HaMashiach. But Olam Haba is off the map. No one can see it. No one's seen it. Ayin lo ra'asa. However, for the sake of the of fuller discussion, we should know that famously this position is disputed in the Gemara by Shmuel. The Gemara says, Upalig ad Shmuel. Shmuel argues, because according to Rabbi Yochanan, all the Nevuas of the Nevi'im are about Yemos HaMashiach. That means who knows what's going to happen in Yemos HaMashiach. You got volumes full of Nevuah that this will happen and this will happen. One can only imagine. But Shmuel says, no. As far as he's concerned, the difference between life now and Yemos HaMashiach isn't that great. Not categorically, not fundamentally. In Shmuel's words, Ein ben ha'olam hazeh l'Yemos HaMashiach ela shibud malchus bovan. Life really will stay very much the same. The only difference is the nations of the world will cease subjugating the Jewish people. They'll be to appreciate the Jewish people. Now that for us is actually major. That's really cataclysmic as far as we're concerned. We probably won't recognize Olam Hazeh with being appreciated. But in terms of the world order and in terms of all those things in the Nevuah, that's not for Yemos HaMashiach. Yemos HaMashiach is just about the Jewish people being appreciated and being able to do what they do best. Which means that the BBC and the CNN and most of the other news agencies will either need a drastic reorientation or maybe reemployment. But in terms of the world order, it's very much the same. This is significant because the Rambam in Hilchos Melachim, towards the very end, the final two chapters of the Mishneh Torah, essentially, are about Yemos HaMashiach. And Rambam states in Perek Yud Beis Halacha Aleph, Al Yale Al Halev, don't think Shebimos HaMashiach Yivatel Davar Mimenhaga Shel Olam. Don't think that anything about the normal way the world runs will disappear. No. Oh yes, some chidush b'maaseh breishis, or some new type of creation. Ela olam kiminhago noheg. So the natural running of the world will remain also in Yemos HaMashiach. In Halacha Beis, he says, Amru chachamim, ein bein ha'olam hazeh l'Yemos HaMashiach, ela shibud malchus b'levad. Right, so the Rambam seems to be adopting Shmuel's view, which from a certain point of view, one may say, is not surprising. The Rambam sees things very much continuing on a natural plane there. Shibud Malchus, which again, for us, is quite enough. However, we should know that the Rambam's words do not end here, which means his position is incomplete at this point. And the reason why is because at the very beginning of Mishneh Torah, that is in Hilchos Tshuva, towards the end of Hilchos Tshuva, the Rambam discusses matters of Olam Haba, again, the future. And the Rambam states in Perek Zayin, pardon me, Perek Ches of Hilchos Tshuva, Halacha Zayin, Kvar hodiyunu achachamim. Chachamim have already told us, Chachamim Rishonim, Shetova se'olam haba, ein koach ba'adam, lahasiga alburia. No one really knows fully what the goodness of Olam Haba is like. Only Hashem really knows. So what about all the nevuas? What about them? Is that Olam Haba? No. V'shekol atovos yemisnabim beviim liYisrael. All of those prophecies, einan el ledvarm shebeguf, shenenim behem Yisrael, limos hamashiach. All of those prophecies are for Yimos HaMashiach. Bizman shetashuv hamemshala liYisrael, when sovereignty comes back to Yisrael. Amru chachamim, kol hanaviim, lo nisnabu ela limos hamashiach. Aval olam haba, ayin lo rasa elokim zulasecha. So what has the Rambam done? Essentially, he seems to have done the undoable. He has taken, actually, both sides of this machlokas in the Gemara and codified both of them. On the one hand, he took Shmuel's side in Hilchos Malachim. Shibud Malchus, that's it. There's no difference between Olam Hazeh and Yimos HaMashiach. Shibud Malchus. On the other hand, he invoked Rabbi Yochanan that Olam Haba, no one knows, and even the Nevi'im couldn't see it. Ayin lo ra'asa Elokim. So in a sense, the question is, the Rambam seems to be in an impossible situation, because where are the Nevuas now? On the one hand, he seems to be like Rabbi Yochanan, that they're not about Olam Haba, that means they must be about Yimos HaMashiach. But Shmuel takes the contrary position, that no, apart from Shibud Malchus, everything will be the same. And the Rambam gives voice to Shmuel in Hilchos Malachim. So the nevuas of all the nevuas of the future seem to be neither here nor there. Not Yimos HaMashiach, because apart from Shibud Malchus, everything will be the same. Not Olam Haba, because no Navi can see that. So what are the Nevi'im talking about? Well, the truth is the answer is in the Rambam himself. Because the Rambam gives an example when he says that the world will really retain its natural state and natural order. He then raises one or two examples which seem to indicate otherwise. And this is back to the Rambam in Hilchos Malachim. Zeshinemar bi Yeshaya. He quotes Yeshaya, famous psukim, Vegar ze'evim keves. The wolf will be with the lamb, v'namem gidi yirbat, and the leopard with the kid. So what about that? That's, as the Rambam would say, I'm telling you that nothing will change. That sounds like things have changed. The Rambam is not factoring in the genetic behavioral modifying substances. It sounds like a change in nature. Mashal v'chida, says Rambam. It's an allegory. It's a metaphor. For what? Inyan hadavar. It doesn't mean the nature of animals will change, because I'm telling you, says Rambam, the nature of nothing will change. But what it means is, Shiyisrael yoshvim lavetach im rishei akum. The Jewish people will be able to live in security with the wicked amongst the nations of the world, who are like wolves, v'namer, and leopards. They will all come to appreciate the truth. Lo yigzalu, lo yashchisu. And that's how it goes. They're all mishalim. V'chein kayotze be'elu advarim b'inyin ha-mashiach, hem mishalim. U'v'imos ha-melech ha-mashiach, says Rambam, when the time comes, yivadal lekol le'ezer davar hayamashal uma'ayin ramzubo. There's many things. You look at it, you think, what's that a mashal for? Says Rambam, we don't know all of them, but mitzvah Hashem, looking forward to finding out, and then life will be an imshal, and it's a good way to learn Nevi'im, to look at that and say that's what it means. But the Rambam gave us an example. Interestingly, as far as the Rambam is concerned, and one would hope that it's true, the notion of the Rishayim of the nations of the world coming to appreciate the Jewish people is a lesser miracle than a wolf not eating a sheep. That's very optimistic, but the Rambam is a firm believer in truth. If they're only shown the truth, they will respond. But in any case, these words of the Rambam are key, because it turns out that this, as far as Rambam himself is telling us, this is what the nevuos are about. They're not about Olam Haba, because no Navi can see that. They're, yes, about Yemos HaMashiach, but still he insists that the natural order of the world won't change, because all of these nevuos are not to be taken as changes in nature, but rather as mishalim for better circumstances and more enlightenment and all of those things. And therefore, although the Rambam essentially has adopted Rabbi Yochanan's view that the nevuos are about Yemos HaMashiach, but he's borrowed Shmuel's words. He's borrowed a phrase, but he doesn't mean it the way Shmuel meant it. When Shmuel meant it, he said that it's only Shibud Malchus. Everything else, all of the nevuos are about Olam Haba, as far as Shmuel is concerned. It's only Shibud Malchus. For Rambam, no, all of those nevuos are about Olam Hazeh, and they'll help Shibud Malchus, about Yemos HaMashiach. So these are at least some of the points of this very interesting discussion, which I think we may have heard parts of, but just to see how they go together. And it all comes back to the questions that we began with in terms of B'chukos HaTeilechu. Why is it that the Torah describes the reward for mitzvahs in terms of Olam Hazeh and not in terms of Olam Haba? Okay? Od Chazon Lamo'ed, there's plenty more to discuss in terms of that matter, but for the moment, we'll leave it over there. Now, after B'chukos HaTeilechu comes, of course, the bad news in B'chukos HaTimasu, and there's many difficult psukim of the Tochacha. And I'd like to get actually to the end, although, of course, when it's lained, it's important to hear the whole thing. But we will, if you can, but we will move to the end, to Pasuk Mem Beis, Perik Kaf Vav, Pasuk Mem Beis. And when it's all done, so the pasuk states, "Vezocharti es brisi Yaakov." I'll remember my covenant with Yaakov. "Va'af es brisi Yitzchak," and also my covenant with Yitzchak. "Va'af es brisi Avraham eskor," also my covenant with Avraham. "Ve'ha'aretz eskor," I'll remember the land, and that's the beginning of things getting better for us. At the end of the day, there is a bris, there is a covenant. And these are psukim that we mentioned on Rosh Hashanah, in Zichronus of Rosh Hashanah, is it? Rashi notes something very interesting with regards to the beginning of the pasuk. "Vezacharti es brisi Yaakov." Says Rashi, if you look at the word Yaakov, you will see it's written unusually, because it's written with a vav. That's quite rare. And Rashi talks about it. It's interesting that Rashi talks about it, because Rashi's job is to respond to matters of pshat. It's interesting to consider whether or not, if Yaakov is written with a vav or without a vav, is that a pshat issue? Does the meaning change? Rashi here is telling us that the way words are written, not just what they mean, but if there's an extra letter, and we find often Rashi we'll discuss chaseros and yaseros, words that are written without a vav, with a vav. It's something for Rashi to get involved with. And get involved, he does. Says Rashi, you should know, how rare is it for the word Yaakov to be written male with a vav? Well, it happens 5 times in the whole of Tanakh. V'chamisha mekomos nichtav male. There are 5 times in the Tanakh that the word Yaakov is written, the name Yaakov is written with a vav. That's interesting. You should know further, says Rashi, that there is a corresponding 5 times anomaly with someone else's name, and that's Eliyahu. Eliyahu is written always with a vav, except there are 5 times that it's written without a vav. Eliyahu. Eliyahu chasa b'chamisha mekomos. Now Rashi is quoting the Medrash, and Rashi says, in case you're wondering, where did the vav from the name Eliyahu go on those 5 occasions? Or perhaps you may be wondering, where did the vav arrive from on the 5 occasions that Yaakov is written in Male? The answer is, Yaakov got it from Eliyahu. Now, what does that mean? It means, says the Medrash, Bechamisha Mekomos, Yaakov notal os mishmo shel Eliyahu. Yaakov has taken a letter from Eliyahu's name. What for? Eravon. As a pledge, as security. Sheyavo v'yivaser geulas bonov. That he should come and tell of the geula of his children. Yaakov has taken this, has taken a letter from Eliyahu, and he's not giving it back. When you come and tell the world that my children have been redeemed, so then you can have your name back, then you can have the vav back, but in the meanwhile, I'm holding on to it. Now, interestingly, before we discuss the Rashi itself, I think it's worthwhile noting that with this comment, Rashi seems to be taking a path contrary to that of the Ramban, the famous position of the Ramban regarding the Tochacha in this week's Parsha. As we know, there are two Tochachas in the Torah, one here in Parshas Bechukosai, the second later on, Parshas Kisavo, and some things are the same, some things are different, obviously connected, but the Ramban writes at length to explain that the difference between them is that they refer to the two Chorbanos. The first Tochacha refers to the Chorban of the first Beis HaMikdash. It's this week's Parsha, and the second refers to the Chorban of the second Beis HaMikdash. And he discusses this at length, as we have discussed this in previous occasions. In any event, according to Ramban, Bechukosai is about the first Beis HaMikdash, which means the recovery from the first Tochacha is about the recovery from the first Golus, Bavel, back to the Beis HaMikdash, but it's not yet the final Geula. Rashi, on the other hand, has quoted us the Medrash that Yaakov has a Vav, and that's important because he's going to hold on to it until Eliyahu comes. It seems that at this point, we're already talking about the future. We're already talking about Eliyahu, which is from the Golus of the second Beis HaMikdash. Rashi seems to be not exactly in line with Ramban there. But be that as it may, Rashi has told us from the Medrash that these five Vavs are taken from Eliyahu to Yaakov. He's holding on to them until Eliyahu comes. Okay. And interestingly, one of these five Eliyahu without a Vav, is about him coming to tell of the Geula. Hinei anochi sholeach lachem es Eliyahu hanavi. Not Eliyahu es Eliyahu hanavi. He's coming. He's coming to tell of the Geula of the Jewish people. He's coming to get the Vav back from his name. The Shaila, if we may ask, is... And one needs to weigh these questions, but Eliyahu has many letters in his name. Potentially, any of them could be taken. But the Vav was taken. Now that may be a Balabatasha question, because to what degree are we prepared to disrupt both his name and Yaakov's name? At the end of the day, Eliyahu became Eliyahu. Yaakov is still Yaakov, it's with a Vav, but I'm not sure how much of an upheaval we'd be prepared to do. Yaakov is not going to render his name unpronounceable or unrecognizable. But nonetheless, it's a Vav. Secondly, why five? After all, presumably Eliyahu will come even for the one time. And if he won't come for the one time, why would he come for the five times? And if we want to have something of a significant amount, three normally is sufficient for us. Something as a chazaka with three times. But it's five times that the Vav is moved from Eliyahu to Yaakov. Who can answer these questions for us? The Maharal in the Gur Aryeh says something which is simply undescribable. It says, Maharal, we're saying that Yaakov has taken a pledge from Eliyahu. He's extracting a guarantorship from Eliyahu. Okay. Already from the Tanakh, the notion of guaranteeing something was always sealed with what's called Tekiyas Kaf. Tekiyas Kaf is a handshake. The Pasuk says in Mishle, in Perek Vav, Bini, im aravta l'reyecha, if you become a guarantor for your friend, beware. Takata lazar kapecha, so you're shaking hands with someone that you don't necessarily know. This is where Shlomo is warning a person to think twice before he guarantees someone else's loans. Takata lazar kapecha, right? You're shaking hands, you don't know who you're shaking hands with. So, So, says Maharal, we see from there and from elsewhere, a Ravon guarantorship is sealed with a handshake. Yaakov is asking Elio to guarantee the Besora of the Geula. How does he do that? With a handshake. Says Maharal, the letter Vav is distinctive because it has a commonality with the finger. They're the same shape. Yaakov is taken five Vavs from Elio. He's taken his five fingers. Yaakov is saying, guarantee and shake. It's a tkias kaf. That's why Vav, and that's why five times. Simply unbelievable. It's a whole new dimension within the Pasuk to have this transferal, transcendental handshake from the Navi to the Chumash. And that's what it's all about. Some years ago, a Talmud of mine from Yeshiva added a very interesting Tosefes to this, of the five times that Yaakov's name is mentioned, they're not all in the same place. Four of them are actually very close to each other. The first one here is in Chumash. The others are all in Sefer Yirmiyah, Altira of Yaakov, and etc. Which means that you see the five Vavs, four of them are together, and the other one is distinct. And that's the analogy of the hand, whereby you have the four fingers together. So Parshas B'chukosai is the thumb, and Yirmiyah are the four fingers. Okay? So this is, it looks like things are brightening up for us. V'zachartes b'risi Yaakov, and Yitzhak, and Avram, v'aretz Yizkor. Next Pasuk doesn't look so good. V'aretz te'azev mehem, the land will yet be abandoned of them. V'siretz ha'shabsoseha, and be reclaiming its Shabboses, its Shmittos, v'ashama mehem. V'heim yitiras havonon, they'll be expiating their sin. So, the Shaila is, how does Pasuk Mem Gimel, the second Pasuk, how is it following on from the first? The first looked like we're beginning to recover. V'zacharti, it sounds like that's the beginning of the way up. But then the next Pasuk, we're just back down again. Where is the progression here? And that's a question that is raised by the Ibn Ezra. So much so, says Ibn Ezra, that no, it's all good. Beginning from Pasuk Mem Beis, it's all good. It's a chiddush in Parshanut. Pasuk Mem Beis, I'll remember everything. I'll remember the bris. I'll remember the land. And what else will I remember? Says Pasuk Mem Gimel, I'll remember for Ibn Ezra. Pasuk Mem Gimel, the second Pasuk, is not further developments. It's the things that Hashem is remembering, that the land will be abandoned of them, and it will be reclaiming its Shabbosos, and they will be, I'm remembering all of that. So these are not subsequent setbacks to remembering of the bris. All of this are things that are remembered together with the bris, and all together will lead to the Geula. That's the Ibn Ezra. It's quite a chiddush. The Malbim has a different approach. The Malbim brings us back to our major concepts, well-known concepts with regards to the Geula. As we know, there are two potential dates that the Geula can come. They are rooted in the Pasuk in Yeshaya, Ani Hashem, Be'ita Achishena. In its time, I will hurry it. Which, of course, is a contradiction, because if it's in its time, then how can it be hurried? And that's why the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, in Daf Tzadik Aleph, that Be'ita and Achishena are two alternatives. It can either come, there is a fixed time, which is popularly considered to be the end of the sixth millennium. I'm not sure everyone agrees to that. We don't know when it is, but whenever it is, it's there. It's the final time. We'll come what may, that's Be'ita. Zochu, says the Gemara, if the Jewish people merit, they can accelerate it. Zochu, achishena, it can come quicker. Lo zochu, so then Be'ita, it will happen anyway. Hashem will orchestrate things to ensure that it happens by that time. That's final clearance, that time of Be'ita. But it can be brought closer by achishena. That's the well-known discussion of the Gemara there about the Pasuk in Yeshaya, Be'ita achishena. However, the Malbim explains that actually these two tracks of Geula, these two possibilities of Geula, are actually in the Chumash itself. In fact, they are in these psukim that we are looking at. That is to say, after the galus, which is represented by the tochacha, so there are two ways to get out of it. The first way is pasuk mem and mem aleph. And pasuk mem reads, v'hisvadu esavonam, v'esavon avosam. That they will do tshuva, they'll confess, and they'll recognize their wrongdoings. Pasuk mem aleph, afani elechim am bekeri, so then I'll speed things up with them, be'vesiosam be'eretz oveihem, in order to finish that process. O ozi kana levavam ha'ara, to fully finish that expiation of which began with their tshuva. So okay, mem and mem aleph are avenue one of getting out of the galus. Beginning with tshuva, it will lead to a fast track. The second avenue is pasuk mem. It's another alternative. Maybe they do tshuva. Could be. And if they don't do tshuva, so then I'm not going to leave them there indefinitely, says Hashem. V'zocharti es bris Yaakov. I'll remember my bris. The bris says they will be redeemed in the end. I remember the land. The thing is, though, if it's just about Hashem remembering the bris, because the Jewish people don't have that much else to show for themselves, and they're not really contributing to the geula, it could take a lot longer. Mem gimel. V'ha'aretz te'ozev mehem b'sirat z'shapsov seha v'heim yitzu asavonam. And that's a whole process that will still need to happen, and it will take longer. So this, in brief, is the approach of the Malbim, whereby these two groups of psukim, Mem and Mem Aleph on the one hand, Mem Beis and Mem Gimel on the other hand, are two possibilities, and they are essentially the underpinnings of the express track, Achishena, or final clearance, Be'ita. And that will actually explain to us something else. There's a certain concept we're familiar with. We're not aware that maybe there are other opinions or other positions regarding these things. Zechus Avos. Is something that we're all aware of. Zechus Avos, Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov. And Zechus Avos, as far as we're concerned, is unending. It's limitless. Zechus Avos. Well, actually, someone in the Gemara, Shmuel, again, this is in Masechet Shabbos, Daf Nun Heyom and Aleph, states, Zechus Avos no longer exists. Zechus Avos finished. It went to a certain point in history, and then it expired. I mean, they were titanic zuchuyos, but the Jewish people used them up. Now, that's quite a distressing thing to hear. Especially as, so that's it? So our relationship with the Avos, does it count for anything? Rabbi Sora Salanter, interestingly, says something, it's very, very, very deep. That when Shmuel, because we talk about Zechus Avos, V'zocher chaste Avos, or maybe Goel Levnei B'nei, and we do like to access Zechus Avos, but Shmuel says, well, it sounds like it's a waste of time because they're finished. Says Rabbi Sora Salanter, when Shmuel says that Zechus Avos were finished, it means that, shall we say, the natural, quote-unquote, cashing in on Zechus Avos can no longer exist because they've already been eaten up. However, it's possible to reinvigorate Zechus Avos by the Jewish people keeping mitzvahs. Because when they keep mitzvahs, and why do we keep mitzvahs? Because we're from the Avos. The Zechus of any act is measured not only by what the act did, but what are its effects. If the effects of the Avos keeping their mitzvahs continue to inspire us and be the impetus for us to keep mitzvahs thousands of years later, that in turn, shall we say, recharges Zechus Avos. And we can yet claim Zechus Avos. So it's a reciprocal thing. It's like a bit of a loop. When we keep mitzvahs, but we keep mitzvahs really because we're from the Avos, then all the mitzvahs of the Avos get reassessed and upgraded, so to speak, because they're now mitzvahs that resulted in that all those years later. And the pool is yet open again for Zechus Avos. That's the famous analysis of Rabbi Sora Salanter. But the Tosus quote Rabbeinu Tam, and Rabbeinu Tam says that when we call upon, you know, we lay emphasis on our descent from the Avos, and Hashem should save us because of the Avos, but Shmuel said the Zechus Avos is finished. Says Rabbeinu Tam, we're not invoking Zechus Avos there. We're invoking bris avos. Bris of, there's two, these are two separate things, says Rabbeinu Tam. Schus avos means the merit of the kindnesses still sustain us, and they may stop at a certain point, and then we're on our own. That's one thing. That's about zuchuyos of mitzvahs, merits of mitzvahs. But there's something else. Bris avos. Bris avos, Hashem has made a covenant with the avos that he will always be ultimately there for their descendants. That's not dependent on zuchuyos, and it can't expire. So it's not all bad, says Rabbeinu Tam. It's even Shmuel, who says that there's no schus avos, it's not that you have nothing to hope for from the avos. Bris avos ensures Jewish survival and ultimate redemption. Well, against this background, we perhaps have new appreciation, together with the Malbim, as to why Pasuk Membe says, V'zacharti es brisi Yaakov, va'af es brisi Yitzchak, va'af es brisi Avram eskor. Hashem says, I will remember the bris of Avram. That sounds like all other zechuyos have run out. Well, according to the Malbim, this Pasuk Membe is the track of Be'ita. That is to say, if the Jewish people do not perform well, but they just survive, so then Be'ito is typified by the Jewish people not really having that many zuchuyos, which means that zuchus avos also are perhaps not recharged, which means you're left with bris avos, which is the final net. And that's why this pasuk, which represents the Be'ito, describes not zuchus avos, but bris avos. And this brings us to something else, which I believe is not well known. The Gemara in Maseches Sanhedrin, Daf Tzadiches Amud Aleph, describes a meeting between Rishur ben Levi and the Mashiach. He asked his Rebbe, where is the Mashiach? He was directed towards the Mashiach. And it's a famous description of the Gemara. He's sitting at the gates of Rome, and he's with the lepers, and he's undoing his bandages, but one by one, because he's ready to come at a moment's notice. And so Rishu ben Levi says to him, Amos Asimar, when are you coming? It's a good shaila. When are you coming? He asked the Mashiach. And Mashiach said to him, Hayo, it's coming today. It's good news. So he came back, he's ready, he's waiting. Came nightfall, nothing happened. So he went to his Rebbe, he says, Mashiach told me he's going to come today, he didn't come. So he said, what did he say? He said, Hayom. So his Rebbe said, Hayom means today, but it's the beginning of a pasuk, which we say in Kabbalah Shabbos, Hayom in Bekolo Tishma'u. It can happen today, but you got to get yourselves together. If you do, it can happen today. Well, without a moment's delay, it could happen today. The Marsha raised a very simple question. We have a tradition that the arrival of Mashiach will be heralded by Eliyahu HaNavi. He will come before Mashiach. How long before? Actually, the Gemara says in Erev in Daf Mem Gimel, he'll come the day before. Now, if he'll come the day before, then it seems impossible that Mashiach could ever say, I'm coming today. Because if Eliyahu hasn't come today, then the earliest you could come is tomorrow. So how could he say Hayom? Even with Bekola Tishmo, how could he say Hayom? That's the question of the Marsha. Is there a day's gap between Eliyahu and Mashiach, or no? That's his question. And a fascinating answer to this question is given by Rabbi Yonasan Eibeschutz in his Sefer on Yerodea called Kresi Uplesi on Simen Kufyud. And Rabbi Yonasan Eibeschutz says, a chiddush. The notion that Eliyahu will come first, a day before Mashiach, is something that will happen if the Geula is left until Be'ita. But if the Jewish people rise to the occasion, and they have enough merit, Zachu, Achisha, it will happen quickly. Eliyahu will not even come the day before, it can happen that day. The entire concept of Eliyahu coming to be Mevaser the Geula is if the geula will be left to its natural time. Eliyahu will see to it that even if we don't deserve it, chas v'chalila, we won't be left in galus. Eliyahu will come to see it. But if we do deserve it, Eliyahu doesn't need to come. Mashiach can come straight away that day. Hayom in b'kolo tishmo. That's quite a thing to say. I pondered these words of Rebbeinu and Eibeshitz, and it occurred to me that this may explain something which otherwise is slightly quizzical. I was very happy because subsequently I found out that this idea is also to be found in the writings of Rav Reuven Margolius in the Nefesh Chaya, which I was very happy about. And further happy because subsequently after that found that it's actually also to be found in the Kli Chemda in Parsha Shmini. And that is, when we have a bris, so there's a special benching. Not only a special zimun, but there's a special set of harachamans. 7, 6. The first few are harachaman, yivarech, the child, and the father, and the moel, and everyone who was involved. Then, number 5. Harachaman hu yishlach lanu mishicho holech tami. May Hashem send us Mashiach. B'schus chasan lemulos damim, right, in the schus of the mila, levasa b'seristovus v'nichumim, la'am echad mefuzar mefarad bein ha'amim. So harachaman number 5 is Zen Mashiach. Number 6, harachaman hu yishlach lanu Kohen Tzedek, asher lukach le'elo. Who is Kohen Tzedek? It's Eliyahu Navi. Kohen Tzedek, Pinchas, asher lukach le'elo, who was taken to obscurity. At huchan kiso kashemish v'yalom, v'yalet panav v'adato v'yiglom, brisi hoiso ito ha'chayim v'ha'sholom, which is said about Eliyahu Navi. It's also Pashit Shaila. Eliyahu was meant to come before Mashiach, but the harachaman for Mashiach comes before the harachaman for Eliyahu. So how can it be? So it occurred to me that based on this chiddush of Rebbeinu and Eibeshitz, we understand that actually these final two harachamans are for two different types of geula. The first one we don't ask for Eliyahu Navi because we're asking for Mashiach immediate, express, achishena, where Eliyahu won't play a role there. That's the ideal for us. Number 6, if that doesn't work out, then be'ita, and make be'ita not. If we can ask, don't make it too far away, even though it's a fixed point. Send us with the be'ita way, with Eliyahu leading to Mashiach. And that's what the Rebbe Reuven Margolius and the Kli Chemda, so Bor Shekivanti to those Gedolim. Rebbe Shlomo Fischer in the Drashas Beis Yishai says that once we remind ourselves, and it's all coming back to this Pasuk Mem Beis, V'zachartiyas Brisi Yaakov, was Briti Yitzchak, we're told that Yaakov was written Mali with a Vav because he took collateral. Go letter from Eliyahu. Why? Be sure to say to come and say the Geula. But it's in this pasuk, and this pasuk is talking about Brisi Yaakov, and Brisi is like in Brisi Yaakov. Bris Avos we saw from the Malbim represents the track of Be'ita. That means lacking any in the absence of any outstanding merit, it will happen anyway in the final time because that's Bris Avos. So Bris Avos represents the final time. And that's where Yaakov took a vav from Eliyahu. Because Eliyahu comes when it's the final time. If it's not the final time, Eliyahu Navi doesn't need to be there before the Mashiach. So we see how from so many different ways everything is in place here in this pasuk, why we talk about Bris Avos and how it fits into the Parshanut here. It's two ways of getting out of the Golos and why the extra vav for Yaakov is here. And it seems appropriate to say that the ideal outcome is for Mashiach to come be'ita, and Yaakov to return the vav to Eliyahu and say, thank you, I didn't need it in the end. Because they didn't need you. But as with all of these discussions, and the Rambam himself says that the details and the specifics, that we don't know. From a certain point of view, it's important to have a good, sound, general understanding of what to hope for and what to expect for and what things will be like, but certainly the best of our energies are not to be used for pondering what it will be like, but rather for making sure that it gets here as soon as possible. We should be zocheh to Yeshua's and Nechamas.